edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Samperone. I'm a licensed naturopathic doctor and professor at the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, and your host for this edition of a program where we discuss issues in health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. You can always reach us at our website, giving us some good topics and feedback on the program. Dr. Kamai's site, The Natural Nurse, is www.naturalnurse.com, and I'm at www.drznaturally.com. So today we have a very interesting program. We're going to be talking about water and water quality and the politics of water and what's going on in, with environmental medicine and pollutants in water. Is bottled water better than tap water? And what's going on with consumers and what's the best water filters and things like that. And we have an expert on air today, and his name is David Green. David Green is from Lexington, Mass., and he's been working in the field of water filtration for 26 years with Multipure Corporation. And he's helped thousands of families improve their drinking water. In the past, he was a licensed acupuncturist. He worked for Whole Foods and also Mass Save. Also, he graduated from at Cambridge Center of Holistic Health. And so we have Dave here to answer lots of questions about what our body is principally made of, water. Dave, are you there?
I am here. I'm
good to
here,
hear your
and
voice.
I'm really excited about talking about this subject. It's one that touches everybody, and everybody touches it many times a day. Maybe not enough times a day, but 8 glasses a day is the standard people talk about. But as you know, Dr. Z, everybody is different, and people's water needs are different. We just know that people can't live more than a few days without it.
And we're going to talk a little bit about, we'll structure the program where we'll answer some questions about water and issues, and then we'll talk at maybe the second half of the program, and we'll discuss other issues like hydrofracking, geopolitical issues around water, water distribution, ecological effects of other contaminants, new contaminants that really weren't around many, many years ago. So that's kind of how we'll structure the program. But tell us a little bit about
this topic. I would say that this topic is something that is as small as the cellular level, because our cells are mostly water, but, you know, the Earth itself is 70% water. So when you talk about geopolitics, of course, we need to talk about the geopolitics of water as well.
And you know what's interesting? In holistic medicine, the macrocosm mirrors the microcosm. You know, it's very interesting, like when you do ear acupuncture, the ear is a homunculus or a kind of a model of the entire human body. So that's what I mean by the macrocosm is similar to the microcosm. And if the earth is 80% water or so, and our bodies are 80% water, and our cells are 80% water, it's got to be very, very critical. And I think it's, you know, I know lots of practitioners that don't even pay much attention to it. And it's very, very critical. Tell us a little bit about, you know, water and its the problems we face in today's day and age with getting clean water into our bodies.
As you mentioned, I was an acupuncturist for about 12 years. I was actually graduated in the third graduating class of acupuncturists in this country, mm-hmm. in Watertown, Mass. So when you talk about ear acupuncture and the homunculus and the macrocosm, microcosm, I get it. Those are things that I worked with a lot. And in our work, we also talked about the building blocks. And we would tell people that you are what you eat, and it occurred to me that you also are what you drink. Unfortunately, two-thirds of people are not drinking enough water, and that includes me on most days. I try. We all try. But because we don't drink enough, it might be because of the taste, or it might be that we're dealing with water that's just not as clean and pure as it should be.
And it's hard because people turn to, you know, first the rage was, well, bottled water. I remember when bottled water really didn't even exist in the grocery stores. And then we had this plastic revolution, or I don't know what you want to call it. I'd say apocalypse maybe, because it's funny, when I was just down in Jamaica, the pristine beaches of the days past were littered with plastic bottles washing up. So it was just a horrible feeling to see these beaches, the last area of Jamaica that is untouched by civilization, similar to the way probably the ancient Arawaks and other Carib Indians had it, and it's littered with plastic. So I know plastic, you know, that's on people's minds. How do I transport the water? Because I'm a busy person. I'm going from here to there. I want a drink, but it's not convenient. And the days of the water fountain really don't exist anymore, and not that that's even a good option.
Right. There's a lot of water fountains I won't go near. It's ironic that in the attempt to get good and clean and healthy and pure water, we put it into plastic bottles that pollute the earth. And now we're finding that some of the chemicals in the bottles themselves, such as some of you have heard of BPA, which is a chemical that's used in those big 5-gallon plastic bottles, they can leach into the water. So in some ways, bottled water is not only expensive to buy, but it's expensive to the environment, and it's costly to it can be costly to your health.
I remember you sent me some articles a while back on bottled water. Review the literature, what they found in bottled water, what's been isolated, because people are in a false sense of,
yeah,
not only is it the plastic leaching, but they've also found serious contamination. And maybe talk about the industry of the, like a little bit about the bottled water industry. Can these people just put city water in there and call it, you know, pristine water from the Alps and get away with that marketing?
Yeah, labeling is a bit of a problem. Some people would ask the question, what does Evian spell backwards? Think about that for a minute. Evian is naive.
That's great, so Dave. I like that.
Not all bottled water is what it purports to be. By the way, I'm not against bottled water in all cases. I think sometimes it's convenient, and especially when there's water emergencies where you can't use the tap water.
Right.
There's crisis situations where people need to use bottled water for a short-term basis. But for long-term, I don't think it's the best way to go. There's two groups that have done pretty extensive research on bottled water and on water in general. One is the Environmental Working Group, the EWG, and the other is the NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council. Mm-hmm. And both of those have done a lot of research. They've looked at hundreds of brands of bottled water and generally find between 20 and 30% of those bottled waters have some measure of contamination, either bacteria or chlorine byproducts or traces of other substances that we'd rather not have in our drinking water. And the problem is that really bottled water is not regulated as frequently or as strongly as tap water is. So there's, I think tap water is usually monitored, public tap water, hundreds of times a month. And it comes under the EPA's jurisdiction, and there's a lot of resources that go into that. But bottled water is not under the EPA. They're under the Food and Drug Administration, and my latest research showed there's just one or two bureaucrats who are in charge of kind of regulating and overseeing the entire bottled water industry. And you are correct that somewhere between 30 and 40% of bottled waters are not from springs or wells. They're actually bottled tap water. Some of it's been processed and filtered. Some is just straight from the tap. Aquafina and Dasani, two of the biggest commercial brands of bottled water, are reprocessed tap water. So you're
paying
thousands of times.
Well, they don't label it, though. That's the problem.
What's that?
I said that problem is that they don't label that. That's not a very, nice thing to say on your bottle is, you know, reprocessed tap water.
Yeah,
I don't
sometimes
think
they
sell
say
many
it comes.
Bottles.
They might say it comes from municipal sources. So you do have to read the fine print just like everything else.
Right. So haven't they found other, like, heavy metals from pesticides in water? Is that a big concern?
Are we talking tap water?
Yeah, the tap water, yeah.
Well, tap water's got any number of problems. Some people say we have good water. In fact, a lot of people say, I have good water in my town. There's a kind of a feeling of pride people have in their tap water sometimes that is really not so deserved because, in study after study and example after example, there are various contaminants in our public tap water. That's why we have a Safe Drinking Water Act, but it only regulates 100 contaminants, and there are 80,000 chemicals in the environment.
Well,
so most of what they test for, those are some of the common ones. But even with those contaminants, they're allowed in your water up to a certain amount. They deem safe, for example.
And then I know besides, you know, whatever they're putting and, you know, particularly it's, I know, pesticides from way back when, volatile organic compounds, I know, is something you've taught me quite a bit about over the years. And in your writings and articles and blogs and things like that. But besides the VOCs, then you have to transport the water from the reservoir to your sink. And, you know, particularly in the older cities and things like that where the pipes are getting kind of old, they pick up quite a bit of contaminants along the journey to your faucet.
Right. I just had a personal experience with that, actually. It was a person in my family who is pregnant right now, and she lives in the city right around Boston, came home one weekend from a traveling and discovered there was water welling up around her sidewalk and had the city come out to look at it. And they immediately dug up under the ground in the street, going from the street to her house, and discovered that there were these very old, 80-year-old, lead water pipes that had ruptured, and they replaced it, which was good. Now she's pregnant, and we know that lead has a strong negative impact on the growing fetus and on children. So pregnant women especially need to be concerned about that. She would have had no way of knowing that, and the ending to the story, the good part of the story is that she had a water filter that was certified to remove lead. So that was a problem caused by the distribution system, and a lot of homes, particularly in the New England area where I am, have lead pipes or lead solder or even municipal lead pipes that bring water to their houses.
And then I remember years ago I had a patient with very high copper levels, and one of the things that they noticed was the greenish copper-colored ring around their tubs, their sinks, and things like that. And I remember questioning about that. You know, how's your water? Because, you know, naturopaths and holistic medicine doctors, we ask questions like that to our patients. Have you ever noticed, you know, because we're concerned with environmental medicine, and we're pretty much one of the only general practitioners that are kind of trained in, to even ask these types of questions. So, and she said, yeah, you know, I'm constantly scrubbing my tub with iron out and rust out and these things like that to try to get this greenish copper color. And I said, well, maybe your pipes are leaching copper. And so, sure enough, we checked the water, and it had high levels of copper. I'll tell the listeners what copper does in a second to you. But I was on then the search for a good filtration system that would remove this copper. And that's when I ran into you at the NOFA conference years ago. And we talked, and you said, well, try it out.
Yeah.
Give it a shot and do a before and after test. And sure enough, I did a before, sent it to the water, independent company for assay, And then after it ran through the various filters that you recommended, and lo and behold, what you said was correct. The copper level was practically nil in the post sample. Now copper, although it is a necessary mineral, can cause all kinds of musculoskeletal problems, and to naturopathic thinking, it's one of the leading causes of ADD, attention deficit disorder, along with lead and other heavy metals, and you know, chemicals in the food. Basically, ADD is an overload type of thing. But you know, this family was experiencing lots of the husband said, you know, I'm experiencing muscle cramps and pain. I think he was a golfer, and he was experiencing lots of Charlie horses at night in his calves, the bottom of his feet, in his hands, in his wrists, and he really couldn't play golf. The kids were on Ritalin.
You should see me play golf. I probably have a problem, too.
You don't have copper, I guess.
No. My golf problems come from other places.
So lack of anyway, concentration. So you know, basically, the family, the whole family, see, this is what's interesting, Dave, is the whole family was affected in different ways. It wasn't just giving one symptom. It was giving multiple symptoms. The women had heavy menses and cramps in the family. The guys had their own problems. And it was all, and they had white, interestingly enough, how I picked it up is they had white spots on their fingernails. Now, when you have white spots on your fingernails, it usually means that you're very deficient in zinc. Turns out that copper and zinc are antagonistic minerals, where zinc is high, copper's low, and vice versa. It's like a seesaw. And so that was a tip-off that there was something that was competitively antagonizing the zinc and most likely copper, although it could be cadmium.
This family was fortunate to have a holistic physician who could help them trace that to the environmental sources.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some contaminants that are in most people's water supply. So most people I talk to are on public water systems, public utilities, and 90% of those utilities in this country chlorinate routinely. Add chlorine, which is a wonderful disinfectant. They add chlorine to the water, and it does a great job reducing bacteria and viruses. But it imparts a smell, an odor, and a taste to the water. And when it mixes with organic matter, such as decaying plant life from the reservoir or the stream or the well, then it forms a dangerous class of chemicals called trihalomethanes. They're also known as disinfection byproducts.
Oh.
Those disinfection byproducts are linked to bladder cancer, and they're linked to all types of dangers for pregnant women and young children. So it's better probably for most people to look into filtration as a way of reducing the trihalomethanes. And some filters take out chlorine, but don't take out the disinfection byproducts that are the result of the chlorine. You may notice the chlorine from the smell and taste, but to find out about those other things, it'd be good to talk to an environmental physician or to... another thing you can do is check with your locality and ask them for the Consumer Confidence Report. It's free and it's available to every consumer, and it tells you what the official testing shows. For example, here where I live in Lexington, Massachusetts, the Consumer Confidence Report shows that we have low levels of disinfection byproducts.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, but my preference would be to have no disinfection byproducts.
Yeah.
And there's a way to achieve that. That's the most common contaminant. I'd be concerned most about things like taste and odor, because if it doesn't taste good, you're not going to drink enough water.
Right.
Chlorine and disinfection byproducts, very common. Heavy metals like lead and mercury, copper you mentioned, And depending on where you live, there may be particular problems. If you're in an agricultural area, there may be atrazine or volatile organic chemicals, maybe agricultural chemicals, or if you're in an industrial area, there may be industrial solvents in the water.
Mm.
And then later in the show, we might talk about a whole new class of chemicals and contaminants called emerging contaminants,
right.
things that we're just learning about.
Now, how about the person with the private well? They often have high levels of minerals, but there's also aquifers that can go downstream,
right.
so to speak, if you're living at the bottom of the hill versus your neighbor at the top of the hill.
Sure, their water doesn't come from the center of the earth.
Right.
It comes from somewhere, and one of the qualities of water is that it moves, it flows, it seeps, it travels underground. These are called aquifers, and all wells have to get their water from somewhere. I'd be very concerned about well water. A lot of people like to point to their well with pride because they own it. It's theirs, and they don't necessarily use chemicals, you know, in the area of their well. But they might have a septic system, and septic systems are notorious for leaching into the ground. It may be that the former owner used to use fertilizer on the land. Or lawn, you know, lawn treatments can seep into the water and get into a well. There's all different ways that pollutants that you can't see or taste, such as nitrates, could be in your well water. So from a health standpoint, it's better to have your well water tested every year, and that's not an inexpensive procedure. But it is the responsibility of a private well owner. It should be their responsibility to themselves to have that water tested frequently and not just take it for granted that it's safe.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the systems that are out there. We'll transition a little bit to some of the options that consumers have to clean their water. They don't trust the government. They don't trust their own well. They don't trust their neighbor up the road who's changing his oil and disposing of the oil or
right.
painting and whatnot and just throwing things. Or, you know, you may be organic, like you say, like I do. I have all the butter. You know, it's interesting. My neighbor came to my garden here in the house and was like, boy, there's so many butterflies here, and I have none. I said, well, do you spray it, pesticides? Oh, yeah. I said, well, I'm getting all your butterflies. So, but then that threw up a red flag. Wow.
Yeah.
He lives uphill from me.
Well, I know you're a terrific gardener. I met you at the New England Organic Farming Association conference years ago, and then was out to your place and saw a beautiful herb garden.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I enjoy, you know, home gardening as well, and I have a really bountiful organic garden. But last year, they tore down the house next to me and built up the land so it would run off, and they built a brand new house there. And now all that land and the water slopes down towards my garden. And what do? They came in and planted new grass and used all the chemical additives and fertilizers. And I'm concerned now that may run down into the water table that feeds my garden. So we are affected by our neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as what to do about it,
right.
Let me refer first to our president. In 2010... President Obama's cancer panel made some recommendations about what we can do about it. They had a report called Reducing Environmental Cancer Risks, What We Can Do About It. And I'll quote from that. Filtering home tap or well water can decrease exposure to numerous known or suspected carcinogens and endocrine disrupting chemicals.
Great. What's an endocrine disrupting chemical?
These are chemicals that mimic the hormone estrogen mm-hmm. in our body and various hormones. So they cause confusion and disruption of the normal hormonal levels in our body.
See.
And there's all kind of effects that are now being noticed in fish and wildlife and frogs that live in water where there is dumping or where are these endocrine disrupting chemicals that are in the water. So they're called estrogen imitators or endocrine disruptors. It's a whole class of chemicals and pharmaceuticals that are showing up in the water. You mentioned before, I would like to just comment on, Dr. Z, that you said we don't trust the government, we don't trust this. I don't know if it's so much a matter of trust. I trust that they're doing the best they can do with the resources we give them. I really do. It's just that I want a higher standard.
Right.
And what I want for my family is water that not only meets their levels of what they consider safe, but exceeds that. So rather than frame it as distrust of government, let's just say I have more confidence and trust in what you and I and our listeners can do to take the responsibility into their own hands.
Good. I like
so
that.
So we appreciate what the government's doing, but we're going to take it to the next step.
There you go.
And in the short term, the next step may be going out to the corner and getting a bottle of water. But that is not, as we mentioned, a long-range solution, and it's not good for the environment. So the next step would be to find out what we're concerned about in our own water, what contaminants there might be in it, and then try to find a filtering technology that will help us to get clean, safe drinking and cooking and showering water for our families. And that's really not such a tough thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are probably thousands of products out there. It may be a little difficult to choose, but I'd be happy to share some ideas with people so they can figure out how to go
in the
right
direction.
Yeah,
like I remember you teaching me about, well, first of all, just to backtrack, you mentioned shower. That's a good point because a lot of people will get the filtration system for their kitchen water and whatnot, but then they're taking the showers in water, and you know, with if you like to take a hot shower, creating lots of steam, you would think that those volatile compounds would volatilize in the steam, and you'd be not only bathing in them but inhaling them through your lungs. Is that
right,
true, Dave?
Your lungs and also your skin. Your skin
right.
is an organ, so it is a good idea. And shower filters are plentiful and easy to find and inexpensive, and they work. So I think a shower filter is a good thing to have, and the essential thing to have is a filter that takes care of the drinking and cooking water, because your kitchen sink is where at least 90 to 95% of your home water consumption occurs. And if you can get some type of a system either under your sink or on the countertop that truly does the job you want, you're going to get the biggest bang for the buck by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the approach I usually stress to people. Yeah. First, take care of your drinking, cooking right. water, then add on a shower filter, and only then, you know, if you have unlimited resources or almost, or, you know, if you want to go through the work of doing it, you can try and find a filter for the whole house. But that, of course, does not filter as well, and you don't get as big a bang for the buck as you do with a point-of-use drinking water system.
Well, a lot of folks have systems that get rid of a lot of the minerals. Like, you know, their water is very high in iron or manganese, and there's a particular metallic taste
right.
to it or smell, or it stains the walls. Tell us a little bit about that. Versus
those are water.
What we're
they're called water softeners or water conditioners.
Yeah.
And they're used usually in rural situations or places where people are using well water, and they have staining of their fixtures and corrosive buildups and maybe some minerals in their water. But that's a very expensive approach, and it's the purpose of it is to eliminate the hardness and the minerals in your water. It's not a purifier, it's not a filter, and it doesn't address the contaminants of health concern. So for, you know, if a person needs that, they might investigate that. Where I'm focusing is the contaminants of health concern, and the way to address that most effectively is with a point-of-use drinking water system.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point because, you know, a lot of people say, they may be listening, say, oh, I have a softener system already. I'm going to tune out, but keep tuning in. Because
They may need both. You know, if you're in an area that has high levels of manganese or iron,
right.
you may need a water softener. Those cost thousands and thousands of dollars. We're talking about drinking water systems. These days, what's really popular, a lot of people have these little pitchers that you pour water through.
Yes.
You fill them up, and the water trickles through this little filter. I won't mention it, but we all know which one I'm talking about. Actually, there are several brands. And they are they're slow, they're inconvenient, and very, very mediocre in their performance. They take out very few contaminants. The leading pitcher filter used to claim lead removal.
Right.
Until Consumer Reports did some studies and found that it wasn't very effective at removing lead, so they've now dropped that claim from their advertising.
So basically now those types of filters, what do they call those, loose charcoal filters or something
like
that?
Yeah, those are, most filters use activated charcoal, and those use just a small amount of granular activated charcoal. And they improve the taste. I'll give them that. They're probably better than tap water, but they're slow, they're inconvenient, and they're not very effective on the major contaminants.
You know, Dave, I hear the music, which means it's time to take a quick break, get a good glass of water, folks.
That's a great
out
idea.
There. And we'll be back after some announcements. You're listening to Progressive Radio Network, Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with David Green talking about 80% of your body, water. Stay with us, folks. Back again with the natural nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Z here with David Green from Lexington, Massachusetts, an authority in the field of water filtration for over 26 years. And we're talking about all issues revolving water so that people can drink and live healthier lives. David, welcome back.
Thank you.
When we left off, we were starting to really get into the meat of what the different systems out there. We talked about the loose granular filters and how they may impart a good taste and they're pretty reasonable, but they really don't do much.
Right. So there's a wide range of products out there and technologies, and we'll talk about one that I particularly like called solid carbon block filtration. And if I can make available to your listeners, I wanted to offer something, a free
sure.
consumer packet.
Yeah.
It's a packet that has an article that I've written about how to choose a water filter,
right.
things to think about, questions to ask, and a free copy of the February Consumer Reports, February 2012, where they analyzed 44 different filter systems and 44 out of thousands. They picked 44, and of those gave 18 their top recommendation. I'll share that for free if people want to email me. Can I give that email address?
Please do.
betterwaterchoice@gmail.com.
Great.
betterwaterchoice@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to send out a free packet. The website that goes along with that, in case people want to look at it or read the blog on there, which has some fantastic articles, is www.betterwaterchoice.com. So betterwaterchoice is one word.
Now, like underwriters that looks at the electric and looks at and keeps the light bulbs, make sure the light bulbs are all doing what they're saying, doing and products are up to standards, who polices the water purification products out there?
There's one organization that stands head and shoulders above the others. It's recognized by the World Health Organization, by the EPA, by the various plumbing boards, and all types of environmental groups. And that organization is called NSF International. NSF used to stand for National Sanitation Foundation, and then when they went international, they just changed it to NSF International.
I see.
NSF certifies what water filters can and which contaminants they can remove. It does extensive testing so you can look up any product and find out what they're certified to remove and at what levels. And it certifies that those filters or those technologies do not add any contaminants to the drinking water in their process. It regulates their advertising to make sure there's no misleading claims. It makes sure the products are reliable and well-built. So it's a very thorough analysis. The systems that NSF seems to have tested and found remove the greatest number of contaminants are solid carbon block filters and reverse osmosis filters. And the company I work with does provide the highest level solid carbon block filter available. Solid carbon is activated charcoal, mm-hmm. but it's compressed into a very dense cylindrical block where the pores are microscopic, and it has a great capacity for removal of disinfection byproducts, heavy metals, all types of things, even parasites from the water.
So when people get this system installed, they have options to put it on top of their counter and put it below. Yeah. Can they mix and match where they can have a carbon system and then also reverse osmosis? Well, tell us about reverse osmosis first. We need to define that first before we go into it.
So there's granular activated charcoal filters. Like those pitchers and some of the kind of filters you see in the hardware stores, those are mediocre.
Right.
Then you've got solid carbon block filters, which are very effective, very simple to maintain, and I think they meet the needs for most people.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's reverse osmosis, which is a much more complex type of system. It uses solid carbon. Our system uses solid carbon as the final stage in the entire reverse osmosis device, which has numerous cartridges, holding tank. It removes all the contaminants. It also takes out minerals from the drinking water. So I only recommend it to people when they have a specific mineral that they're trying to address that's at dangerous levels.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because there's several people in my neck of the woods that have very high uranium levels. And, you know, this is not, you know, weapons-grade uranium, but it's kind of a byproduct of the bedrock,
mm-hmm.
which can off-gas and create a radon issue, which is, of course, mm-hmm. a carcinogen. So I'm wondering if the reverse osmosis would take care of the uranium. Any experience with that, Dave?
The radioactive substances are also known as radionuclides, I think, and
right.
radon is one. And gee, the people in near Fukushima were dealing with cesium. Some of the people in Pennsylvania who live near fracked wells might be dealing with radioactive waste that's forced out of the ground by the fracking process. Reverse osmosis is certainly the preferred way of dealing with those kind of substances. And I believe our solid carbon block filters are also very effective with radon.
Interesting. Good.
Yeah. So I think it's what's important is to talk to somebody who's an expert and have them guide you so you can figure out what's in your water, what are the things you need to look at and address, what's your situation. I usually, when I talk to people, I find out whether they have any taste or odor, whether they know of any local contaminants, whether they have any specific health concerns. And then I ask them logistical things. I ask them if they own or rent, because people that rent often get countertop systems, or people on a very limited budget get a countertop filter. People that own their home usually like an under-the-sink carbon block filter. And people who live on wells and have high levels of minerals, sometimes they need to get reverse osmosis systems. So
yeah,
it really,
it's just a matter of finding out
what people need. It's like being a holistic physician in a way. I guess I'm a water doctor.
Absolutely.
The diagnosis is two-thirds of the battle.
Yeah. And the other choices that consumers have to consider when they're making their choice. So clearly, if you're a portable person and moving from apartment to apartment, I guess it's there's a cost involved in installing these things. You maybe need a plumber. Or,
well, not with the countertop system.
No, not the countertop.
Yeah, if someone's moving a bit, and usually they're renting, I usually recommend the countertop systems because they're extremely portable.
Mm-hmm.
I had one of those, and I would take it with me when I traveled.
Right.
If I go away for more than 2 or 3 days, I've got my portable system with me.
So there are systems that you can actually just screw into the hotel or bed and breakfast that you're staying in and just...
That's right.
Wow, that's right.
We have that, yeah.
Now, you mentioned the new Consumer Report study in February 2012, just came out. Tell the listeners a little bit about what that was all about.
Oh, about every 3 or 4 years, Consumer Reports does a review of water filters.
I see.
And this one was in February of 2012, so it just came off the shelves.
And they'll get a copy of that if they
right, right.
Email
I can send you a
great.
Free copy of that.
Right.
It's just a couple of pages. They talk about the fact that there's kind of a backlash against bottled water because of all the environmental concerns,
yeah.
And that aging water pipes and distribution pipes are problems, and now there's a huge debate over fracking, hydraulic fracturing, and some of the pollution concerns. So they recommend that people investigate and look at the different types of filters, which they pretty much explain in this article. And then they list, as I said, 18 of the
top five
filters.
Yep. Yeah. Tell us about fracking. That's come up several times in our conversation. What is it? And how is it used, and what's going on with it as far as contaminating our water?
This is really, it's going to become just a huge, huge issue, because even though fracking has already stirred up a controversy, the degree to which they're drilling new wells is astounding. I was just looking into this, and most of the fracking, or a lot of the fracking, it's a way of getting natural gas out of the ground.
Oh.
As you know, we're trying to become energy independent and cut down our reliance on foreign oil. And so the gas company is pointing out that we have tremendous natural gas reserves. But the way to get them, they're deep underground, is by fracturing the earth. That's where the term fracking comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest deposit is called the Marcellus Shale, and it covers parts of New York State and Pennsylvania and West Virginia. That area in there is a tremendous reservoir of natural gas. And these gas companies are going in at a phenomenal rate and setting up wells and drilling. They drill down several thousand feet, and then the drill and the casing go horizontal until they find the gas they're looking for. And then they inject under tremendous, maybe 20,000 pounds of pressure per square inch, tremendous volumes of water laced with thousands of gallons of highly toxic chemicals and sand. And they blast this toxic soup through their drill pipes, and it fractures the earth underground and opens up the various pores and cavities so that gas can then flow through the pipeline. And then they've got to collect all this chemical stew and whatever they can collect back up, they do, and they take it away in big waste tanker trucks and have to dispose of that. God knows where it goes. People that live in the areas around these frack wells have experienced contamination of their wells, their tap water, of their streams. It changes the whole ecology of the area, and people are concerned about it.
Why can't they just use water? Why do they have to use the toxic chemicals for it? I don't know much about it. I have to research that. But
we're talking about hydrochloric acid and a bunch of other extremely caustic.
Yeah.
I'm not a chemist.
Right.
I can't tell you that much. I just know that that's part of the process of trying to open up the earth, and it's kind of I hate to be so graphic, but it feels like that we're raping Mother Earth.
Yeah.
We're drilling deep. We're fracturing. There have even been earthquakes, minor earthquakes, reported in areas around some of these frack sites. So I think we're really playing with fire here. And it's just beginning. They've got thousands of wells already drilled in Pennsylvania, but in the next 10 years, we're looking at well over 100,000 wells.
Is there a way to find where listeners could find out where they're drilling so that they can be prepared and get their water filter and their shower filter, because there's a big chance that their groundwater is going to be contaminated?
Yeah, I think the people that live in locales where fracking is occurring know that.
I know it already.
Yeah, it wouldn't be a surprise to you. And most of the country is not, most people are not in the locale of a frack well.
Okay.
But it's a concern. It just points out the extent to which we will go in search of our energy fix.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we'll do. We learned about that at Fukushima. Look,
The
Japanese
horrible.
Economy really totally dependent on nuclear energy, and that natural catastrophe occurred, and there was all kind of problems, including contamination of water as far away as Tokyo, where people were told that infants shouldn't drink their tap water.
Yeah, it seems like certain groups of people seem to be more sensitive to water problems. The elderly, maybe the very young, the elderly,
exactly.
Confirmed.
Yeah, elderly, very young, people with organ transplants or kidney dialysis,
right.
Pregnant women, and nursing mothers, particularly vulnerable children. The very populations that most need and deserve protection are they're at the greatest risk, and standards that might be okay for a healthy person to consume may not be for these populations.
Now, lastly, since we got about 10 minutes left of the program, you talked a lot about some of the emerging contaminants. These are things that are new on the horizon, mostly man-made, human-made chemicals, but also drugs, pharmaceuticals that have been found in our water supply that are creating havoc with our bodies. Now, tell us a little bit about some of these emerging contaminants.
Yeah. Emerging contaminants, it's a category that's now used to describe contaminants that either we didn't know about before or that we're just starting to find in trace amounts in the environment and in our water, and we may not have known the health effects. Whereas we test a lot of chemicals we measure it in parts per million, some of the pharmaceuticals have been found in parts per trillion, but in drinking water supplies across the country. These are things like, as you mentioned, steroids, antibiotics, antidepressants in your water. How's that? Are you feeling good today?
Drink some water.
Epilepsy.
Well, you know, it's
blood pressure medicine.
Most people say, one part in a trillion, that's not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I shouldn't be worrying about this. These are emerging contaminants.
We're learning more and more. And what we're learning is that at low levels, these contaminants are starting to show up as creating problems in the natural environment. And we mentioned that a lot of studies are done with fish and frogs and other aquatic life because they live in it. And we're learning more about the effects on people. But if I can mention also skincare products, insect repellents, nonstick products, and flame retardants. Silent Spring Institute, and I recommend people go to silentspring.org. It's a cancer research group in Massachusetts that looked at a great number of wells and waterways on Cape Cod. And they found high percentages of those waterways, 85% of the waterways sampled, had some of these trace emerging contaminants. They found 27 different contaminants.
Wow.
The U.S. Geological Study studied 139 streams and found 82 chemicals in 80% of the waterways. So this could come from wastewater. The pharmaceuticals actually pass through our bodies and get excreted and then show up eventually in the water supply. So we're just learning more about it.
There's no doubt we urinate them out. I was hoping that the Earth would filter these things.
I'm sure it filters it to some extent,
yeah.
but things move through the earth, and we're learning more about things like chromium-6, perchlorates. There's always new contaminants that we're learning about that we haven't yet considered, and standards are not set for most of these. So there's really no protection other than a good filtration system.
Right.
Can I tell people again about that consumer packet?
Yeah.
Before we go off the air, I wanted to let people know that they can email me, and I will send them a free packet with a copy of the February Consumer Reports and an article about how to choose a water filter. And all they have to do is email me at betterwaterchoice@gmail.com. And go to the website, betterwaterchoice.com, as well.
And finally, the geopolitics of water is a very interesting subject to touch on that, you know, because people in Arizona and California, people that live in deserts out there, they're always fighting. There's big fights about water, diverting the Colorado, who gets the share of water. So water, you know, I read a book. My son got a book for Christmas. I can't remember the title, but it was about what it's going to be like in 2100. And there's going to be water police. There's going to be, I mean, it's going to be federal crimes to waste water because water is such a precious commodity, although, like you said, water can't be really destroyed or created.
Yeah,
it's just kind of there, locked up either in the ice caps or somewhere.
All the water that ever existed still exists. So
still
the water that was around during the time of the dinosaurs is still on the earth. It's just, you know, it's in different places, maybe where it's scarce for some people and fortunately plentiful for most of us right now in the United States.
Yeah.
But even that's starting to change, and I think climate change will have a big effect on that, and then further industrialization and the way we live. Our agricultural methods are very water intensive. They use a lot of water. Our lifestyle itself, we don't conserve water very well. We could do much better in that area.
You realize that, like, last year we had the hurricane, we had a big ice storm in October, we had a tornado here in my town. We were out of power. We had no water, and I really came to appreciate how much water we used because I had to lug it or buy it or purchase it or find it somewhere, you know?
Yeah, they say you don't miss your water till your well goes dry.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another quote. Maybe it's actually, some people contest whether he actually said it or not, but Mark Twain was talking about water, and he said, "Whiskey is for sipping, and water is for fighting."
So he knew. He knew that it was going to be a bone of contention. That's
certainly that's been discussed in the Mideast. You know, water is a real problem there. I didn't realize, but the Tigris and Euphrates in Iraq, that's a plentiful water area. And there's other parts of the Mideast where there's not so much water.
Yeah.
But water can also be an area where different societies may have to learn to cooperate. So it may be the fact that there isn't plentiful water in some areas may be a reason why people have to learn to live together better and solve some of these problems.
And then even in medicine, I've virtually turned cases of osteoarthritis around by just having patients drink water, as water is so important for your joints. It's amazing how we come full circle, even in our conversation, talking about how water is so much part of our bodies. And I think that there's a book called Your Body's Cry for Water, where the doctor discusses the many, many pathologies, headaches, aches and pains, gout, so many different illnesses, arthritis, osteoarthritis, that could be really helped by just proper water and proper hydration.
Sure.
People are on diuretics. They're on blood pressure medications. They're being dehydrated.
Right.
We don't really know how. Now, I guess lastly, the age-old question, how much water should you drink? And are there any good advice to leave with the listeners out there is how much you should drink? How do you know you're dehydrated?
You know, the figure we work with is 8 glasses a day, but obviously a person who is an athlete would need a lot more than that. Somebody who's pregnant or nursing would need a lot more. And someone living in a warm climate would drink more.
Mm-hmm.
These are common sense things. 20% of your water can come from your foods. So I would say eat foods that are you know, fruits and vegetables and yogurt and things, soup, things that have a lot of water in them. Avoid things like caffeine and cola drinks because they have a diuretic effect. So they'll make you urinate more. And the way you can tell if you're properly hydrated is that your urine should look fairly clear and not bright yellow.
That's
unless it's right after you took your vitamins. Sometimes vitamins can give that color, but clear urine is a sign that you're properly hydrated.
Well, we've learned a lot, David. Thank you very much. Why don't you give out that information again, because I would like to get a copy of that Consumer Reports study, that's for sure.
Right, I'd like to send you one. Sure. What I need from people is just for them to email me and request their free consumer packet on how to choose a water filter. Just email betterwaterchoice@gmail.com. You can check out my website, www.betterwaterchoice.com. And my phone number, if you want to talk, is 781-863-5233. So I want everybody here to make the better water choice, and I'd be happy to help them do that.
Thank you, David.
Appreciate good talking
your help
to you.
And great advice on water, something we take advantage of until the well runs dry, like you said. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, wishing you the best of health and happiness. Stay well, folks. Bye-bye.